Hello and welcome to the Live Fundraising Success webinar, Leverage Online Communities and Social Media Strategies to Engage Donors and Other Supporters, sponsored by Avectra. I'm Joe Bolin, Senior Editor of Fundraising Success and the host of today's event. Today's webinar will examine the growing role of online communities and social media in creating vital messaging opportunities for all segments of your audience. You'll learn to create the right strategies for your mission and business goals, leverage new social technologies to increase the effectiveness of your existing communication efforts, and empower current friends, donors, members, customers, and supporters to evangelize your message to engage others. Before we get started, let me point out a few tips on how to make the most of today's live webinar. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the help button at the bottom of the console, or let us know via the ask a question box. Second, make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can see and take part in any interactive portion of today's presentation. To get a PDF version of the slide presentation for future reference, click on the download slides button on the console. If you are enjoying this webinar and would like to spread the word to your peers, you can send an email invitation directly from the console by clicking the invite a colleague button. You can also give us your feedback at any time during the hour by clicking the survey button. This survey will also be distributed at the end of today's webinar. As you know, today's speakers will be answering select questions live at the end of the presentation. Use the Ask a Question feature on the console to submit your questions for consideration in advance at any time. If you leave the presentation at any time, you can access the entire webinar on demand for the next 90 days via the same audience link you used to watch the presentation today. After that, the webinar can be viewed from the FS website at fundraisingsuccessmag.com. Finally, we encourage you to tweet about this webinar today. Please use the hashtag #FSWebinar when doing so. In the meantime, let me introduce our speakers. With us today is James L. Ward, Vice President, Vertical Market Strategy at NFI Studios, and Christina L. Johns, Online Media Manager at International Fellowship of Christian and Jews. And with that out of the way, let's get started. James, why don't you take it from here?
Great. Thanks, Joe. So, everyone, thanks for joining. My name's James Ward. I'd like to thank everybody again for joining. We want to go ahead and get started. We have a couple poll questions to start off the actual conversation. If you see here, you should be able to see it. Are you currently active on one or more social platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Dig, YouTube, Foursquare, and so on? Here you can see the actual results. We had an overwhelming 90% of you already active on some form of social media platform. Do you feel social media may be a fad? Again, overwhelmingly 91%. Has your association or company invested in a private social community? This is a very good question that you guys can see here. So, only about 30% of you have looked at investing in a white label community for your association. So we'll definitely focus a little time here as we go through the presentation. Next question. If not, has your association created a social strategy in leveraging Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, different networks that are already available to the public. So here we have about a 50-50 split. I will definitely spend a little bit of time here as well. And with that, we'll go ahead and get started. So thanks for taking the short survey. It's great for everyone on the phone to be able to get a quick benchmark on where everyone else who's involved in the webinar today stands, as well as themselves. So again, my name is James Ward. I work for NFI Studios. NFI Studios is actually a white label social community provider for associations and businesses. My role with the organization is to objectively identify where, as a product-driven social enterprise software company, we should go to be able to meet our customers' current and future requirements as we move down the road. During the conversation today, we're going to take a look at a few different things. First off, I'm going to start with the state of the business. Some of this may be a little bit repetitive in looking at social media trends and things that are going on, but these trends are very important based on some of the key strategies that I'll go through and looking at how to be successful in launching a social community and leveraging that for the organization.
Hey, James, don't mind the butt in here, but I'm getting a lot of questions on could you define what a white label private network is for our audience?
Sure. So if you think about social communities, so Facebook is a social community. A white label social community is a community that has the same type of functionality like, say, Facebook or LinkedIn, but it's actually wholly owned by the association. So they can control the conversations, they have access to the data and things that are going on inside of the community, whereas Facebook is something that's open for anybody. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
All right. So here, you guys can see on the screen here, what is social technology? At its core, Anthony J. Bradley, he's actually a group vice president at Gartner Research. Gartner does a lot of IT leading research in the industry. And I'm not going to read this to you, but the key here is that at its core, it's a massive community of participants all focused around productive collaboration. So my illustration here, on one end you have, in terms of least complexity, just the simple ability to leave comments on a website, for instance. In between there, you would have open platforms like Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn. A little bit more complex would be a white label platform that's wholly owned by an association or a company to more hands-on control what interaction happens between their constituents, their donors, or their members. And on the extreme end, which we'll get to a little later in the presentation, would be social CRM. And this would be actually leveraging the data inside of a wholly owned community to make better business decisions around how you interact with those constituents. So across these options, the real big question is, where are we going? So we're going to spend a few minutes here looking at some of the trends. Some of them, again, you may have already heard. Some of them you may not. This slide actually illustrates the very rapid decline in how people are using email as a communication tool. This isn't just across the tweeners, you know, the 12 to 17-year-olds. These are big double-digit changes across the board, all the way up to the 45 to 54-year-olds. So the key here is that people are not stopping communicating with each other. They're ultimately changing the way that they do it. One of the big catalysts that we've identified in kind of leading into the rapid changes in email usage is with the rapid acceleration of mobile usage. With mobile phones, obviously you can send emails from a mobile phone, but many times you don't have access to all of your email addresses. And so people are actually leveraging social technology through a mobile platform to stay connected with other individuals. All they have to remember is their name. So as many of you have probably heard different stats, social media is here to stay. It's taking over. Just during the course of our conversation here, roughly 30,000 new individuals will sign up for Facebook. In addition, I kind of dropped in one of my own personal photos down here in the lower right. This is actually my 83-year-old grandmother who took this picture specifically for her Facebook profile picture. If you'll notice, and I'm not sure you guys can see the ultra detail, but she's still in her tennis shoes. The jet ski was not started. She just kind of floated out there with a rope, took the picture, yanked her back in, and that was it. My point here is that it's for everyone across the board. The business of the future has to identify how they are going to make the shift in order to remain relevant. It does create enormous challenges for any organization to set forth a strategy, make the investment of human capital, money around a software solution, and the right opportunities to engage their customers. But it offers greater opportunities for associations, nonprofits, and companies alike. Social technology is only data until somebody does something with it. I think I should probably restate this in saying that the value proposition of social media as a standalone is for the users, your members, the donors, but the real future of the technology is learning how to leverage it to better engage in a more meaningful interaction with your constituents. And that's where we're all going. You know, this slide here on the screen, this is a lot of data, but I'm sure some of you recognize this is the never-ending number pi. The value for the institution, and this is where we're all going, where everyone now is striving. There's a lot of different individuals, experts out there, much smarter than myself, that have realized and identified that the value for the institution is the intersection of social media and decision science. And really, all they mean by this is that, again, identifying how to leverage the interaction, the information, the activities in a wholly owned community of an association's or of an association to make a more meaningful engagement with that donor or that member. So now that we've taken a look at some of the trends, we're going to go through five key strategies for social success. There's a few things I want to point out before going into these strategies. They're almost all going to relate back to some of the trends that we've identified, but all in the back of your mind, I want you to be thinking about the different types of models that are available with social technology. With those models, you have external versus internal communities. External would be a community for people outside of your organization. Internal would be more of a collaborative intranet, thinking about your employees and how to break down silos from within side of the organization. You then have public versus private. Public being anyone has access to indiscriminately. A private community being something that there's some sense of exclusivity for a member, a donor, a volunteer, or a customer. So with that, we're going to take a look at our first key strategy, the idea of working it backwards. So you want to make your community purpose-driven, and the best way to do that is like any math equation, is to identify where it is you're trying to go. What are you trying to solve for? What are the underlying goals? What does successful adoption look like? Is this going to take change management? If so, who are those people that we're going to have to manage through the transition? So these are some of the questions that you want to think about from a high level when identifying not only what model of a community that you're going to leverage, but how you're going to use different technologies and intellectual capital from within side of your association. The second key point would be leveraging multimedia. We know that Facebook and Twitter and these items, they're being used on a more regular basis than donors or members are going to your individual website. And so use that to your advantage. Motivate them. Use ways to incent them to follow you on Facebook, to follow your key executives on Twitter, to have the most updated information on what's going on with the organization. Talk about those things early and often, white papers that are being released, or a new success story around your nonprofit. Give somebody an update on a donation campaign, because if you know they're using those more often, they'll be logging in, they'll be updated, and then pulled back into your website's own, again, white label community where they're able to collaborate and access that information. The next item is make it a product for the people. You know, this is one of the most prolific images of the last election. We're based here just outside of Washington, D.C., and different people would argue, but essentially President Obama was elected because of his campaign and that it was simple and derived from the desire of the people. Your community should do exactly the same. It shouldn't need a manual. It should be designed for what you're looking to accomplish. A couple key points here. One of the reasons that a lot of associations are moving towards a white label community is that they realize that Facebook and Twitter and some of these other free platforms aren't necessarily designed for their business model. Take a professional association, for instance. In a professional association, your members are focused around their key profession, what those best practices are. Facebook is more designed for social interaction with best friends and viewing pictures of your latest trips. It's also why Facebook doesn't act as a very good dating site. It would not be a good idea to log onto Facebook and identify another individual that you don't know and then send them a message asking them out on a date. Whereas Match.com is fitted perfectly for that. So remember to keep your product for the people and purpose-driven. Into my next slide, this is still part of the product for the people. Listen to the trends. Leverage them to your advantage. If you know that mobile applications are something that people are moving towards, make sure that you're not left out. You can see here, this is part of our mobile solution. One of the things that I mentioned on the last slide is make sure that it makes sense. It doesn't need a user manual to be able to make it work. And the last part of product for the people is make sure that the technology is designed for adoption. In your own turnkey solution, make sure that the software actually leverages functionality to assist in your success. So here are two screenshots. One, you can see we have a member matching capability. And other software solutions actually take this on a couple different ways. One of the ways that we've identified is through our member matching. Through a series of questions that people answer about their interests in donor engagement or donor projects with an association or their professional experience, those individuals are either paired with project holders in the association or other members of that community. The bottom part, the welcome to the community, is an online concierge. And this automates a very easy process when somebody comes in to actually show them how the software works. What is and how do they very quickly have this customized for them? Our next to last key is empower the enterprise. You want to be able to engage your internal employees to cultivate the community. Every association, every nonprofit that I speak with, one of the key items that I stress is that they need to identify ways to engage their entire team. If your employees won't engage in the community with your donors or your members, it may be difficult to get people you don't pay to use it as well. And our last slide. I mentioned that we were going to get to the whole social CRM. This is where social technology is eventually going.
Some of you may have heard about Facebook using the like buttons that everybody's been using for the past 3 years to ultimately put different ads that are more applicable to different users in front of them. It's the same type of idea that can be leveraged for your donors or for your members. So I'm not going to bore you by reading Gartner's definition of social CRM, but the long and short of it is use the data inside of your white label community to better engage with those individuals.
Hey, James, we have a couple questions. Some people unfamiliar with the term CRM, so can you just explain that to our audience?
Sure. So CRM is customer relationship management, or in some instances you would call it a donor system or an association management solution. But CRM, it really all it is a database of all of your donors or members or customers.
Okay, thanks.
So here, you want to measure the virtual interaction. We've developed something called our A score. Again, some technology companies are doing this differently, but what this is it's a proprietary constituent scoring method that allows for you to identify your most valuable members and donors. And what you do is you actually numerically score membership, fundraising, social media activities, and then you can actually weight those different activities differently, depending on your organization's unique characteristics, to make generalized assumptions about the profitability or probability of a donor donating more or less, or a member renewing membership or not. So you can see here I have Daryl Hopkins' record, and his score is 378. Well, over a historical period of time, you would be able to look back on those types of scores that were scored and how fast somebody renewed membership or how many different donor campaigns they were engaged in, and you'd be able to make actual assumptions about that individual to better engage them in different facets of the organization. So I think we're going to hold the question and answer session until the end. So I'd like to turn it over to Christina, unless we have some pressing things, Joe, that you want to address now.
Well, one thing that came up a couple times is, like, are private and white label social communities similar to each other, or what's the difference between the two?
Yes. So private community or a white label community, those are two, one and the same.
Okay. All right, Christina, I think you're good to go.
Okay, great, thanks. Hi, my name's Christina Johns. I work for the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews, which is an international nonprofit. Basically, I'm the community manager for all of our social networks that we participate in. Initially, when we started, we didn't really have any social network presence. That was a couple years ago, and today we have around 130,000 supporters across the various social networks like Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, etc. So what I'm going to talk to you about today, similar to what James was talking about, but a little bit more specific and focused on nonprofits specifically. These are the topics that I want to talk about, which first is, you know, creating and growing a community. And what it takes to do that. And because obviously in order to leverage in a community, you need to have one. And the difference between just having a group of people on a Facebook page and having a group of people that are willing to go off and actually advocate on behalf of your mission. So to start off with, I wanted to kind of illustrate what it means to have a sense of community. We talked about this a lot at the, I'm sure some of you out there have went to the Nonprofit Technology Conference, which was last week, where there was quite a few sessions on community building and how essential that could be for a nonprofit, especially when you are reaching out to a new audience. This cycle kind of really explains the process that community managers, which is a common term now that a lot of nonprofits are using for the person that really is in charge of updating your different communities online, like your Facebook, and kind of driving that force. So the first thing that I really wanted to touch on was the idea of community, or the idea of content, excuse me. I often get the question, how do we know what to post to our Facebook page? How do we know what to post to Twitter? The easiest answer I can, I usually give is, well, what works in your other channels of communication? What works in your direct mail? What works online? Usually there's some type of overlap. If you have a specific campaign that does really well in your direct mail appeal, the same topic is probably going to do well inside your social community. It's that idea of using what already works for you, what's worked for you in the past, and adapting it and using it just in a new medium in a different way. And then you listen to what happens in the community. Are people responding to the content? Are they liking it? Are they asking questions? And then you start to identify the type of community that you have, whether it's a really vocal community, what types of interests that they have specifically, because a lot of nonprofits have several different aspects to their organization. It's not just one program. So there might be something specific. I'll probably going to use IFCJ, which is the abbreviation of my nonprofit, as an example often. But for instance, IFCJ has three main programs. One of the programs might do really well on Facebook, the other one not so much. So you can kind of take that and watch what's happening on the community and use that as a gauge to determine what content works best for you where. One of the things that we just kind of spoke about was content and listening. That's really essential to build a community and to get to the level of where a community can do something extraordinary, like go out and do peer-to-peer fundraising, advocate on behalf of your organization, or you find those individuals within the community that are going to go that extra mile for you. So what you want to really do is focus on the different types of content, the different types of tools that you are already employing that you can really translate into social media. So another big question that I get is always, well, how do you identify what works? I think it's become more, the question's kind of flipped. Instead of how do you identify what works, it's choosing what to identify. There are so many different ways you can gauge your community and the engagement online in your social communities that you really kind of have to go in as the organization and know what you're trying to accomplish. So one of the main things IFCJ was trying to accomplish is to generate new traffic to our website, increase the traffic, get new visitors, things like that. So when I began, I set up the processes to track those individuals that are coming off of your social media sites and then eventually learning about you more and investigating you on your official website. GA is perfect for that, Google Analytics. It's a free tool. It's relatively easy to learn, and it really gives you a plethora of information that that you can use. There's also social network measurement, which is also helpful. Facebook Insights, Hootsuite, they could talk to you about conversions and how that works. Adapting and responding is also important with communities. One of the main things that IFCJ is very we have a biblical message, we have political messages and humanitarian messages. So when we post things on our different communities, our different pages on Facebook or on Twitter, it was interesting for us to find out that photos worked well for some messages but not others. So these are things that you could be looking at. Facebook especially makes this easy for you to gauge through their insights platform, which shows engagement and how the different ways you can look at the content and how it performs within the page.
Hey, Christina, just backing up a couple slides there. I'm getting some questions on exactly what crickets are.
Oh, yes. That's when you post something on social media, let's say you have, one of our pages has 60,000 people on it. So 60,000 is a lot of people. If you post something to Facebook and nobody comments on it, nobody likes it, you don't hear anything, obviously what you posted isn't working. So you need to adjust. You need to adapt. Why didn't that piece of content work? Let's store that away, keep that knowledge, and try something different. So that's what I mean by that. Sorry.
No problem.
Okay. again, one of the things that we talked about at N10 was community-driven content. James talked about that too as well. This was really interesting. I had posted a comment on our Facebook wall, and one of the individuals came back and said, hey, you know, I saw you guys on TV, but you're only on at, you know, 3 a.m., and, you know, I would like to show my kids, my family. Well, it's a 30-minute program. I would have never thought that, you know, online Facebook was a good medium for that. But, you know, they're driving the content. We're providing them the tools, the videos, the photos, the stories, and they're driving the car. They're telling us where they want to go, what they want to hear about, what matters to them. So here are some case studies that I just wanted to share. This was a great campaign that Epic Change had done. It's called To Mama With Love. It was done last year in 2010. That was basically surrounded. It was like a week-long campaign that started on Mother's Day, and it allowed people to go in and share stories about their mother and why their relationship with their mother was important to them, and it was all to raise money for a woman in Tunisia who was trying to build an orphanage or a school for these children in her community. So they were able to make this personal by and community-driven by really focusing in on the emotional ties that, you know, people have to their mothers and equating that to what this woman is trying to do for all of these children. They were very successful. They were they raised around $17,000 and accomplished their goal within a week's time, and they were able to build the school and came back and did a great follow-up program and integrated it very well with their this slide shows how they integrated, what James was talking about earlier, with the different types of communities. So that what you just saw in the previous slide was their website. And these are little screenshots of what they did on Facebook, what they did on Twitter. It all has the same branding, the same feel to it, but it reaches out to the different communities where you live. So I have 60,000 people that are sitting on Facebook. I'm not going to get all 60,000 to come to my website. But if I carry over that branding, the campaign, the feel over to Facebook that we're, you know, highlighting on our website, then, you know, you're touching both communities where they are. Another example or case study focuses on the idea of birthdays. So if you have a Facebook account and you've had a birthday, you're probably familiar with getting lots of happy birthday wishes on your Facebook wall. Well, Charity Water decided to take that idea and kind of move it a step further, where they decided to have a community-driven campaign that's about giving up your birthday. Essentially, you would fundraise, and they gave you all these tools that you could use within your community to raise funds for the month of September. They did a lot of the same integration techniques that we saw in To Mama With Love. They really dedicated themselves to this campaign. It was the first thing you saw when you went to their website. It was, you know, the first when you got an email. It was a giant September campaign email. All of their communication channels were integrated with this idea, and Facebook was just another piece of it. Twitter was just another piece of it. But it allowed all these communities that they spent time developing to utilize the tools that they're to advocate on behalf of their mission. James spoke about white label communities. They did something kind of similar to that. They allowed you to create your actual, like, a profile page within their website. So you'd sign in, you'd create your own personal page, and then you can go invite your friends and your family to also give up their birthdays and also participate in the campaign. They provided the same tools to do that on the other networks as well. So this kind of shows, this was their Facebook splash page when you clicked on their Facebook page, and they even wrote the tweets for you so you could tweet them out, share them with the September hashtag. It was easy to follow. They created a cause on Facebook. They used all these networks to their advantage. Throughout the year, they've been building them, and then they just decided that they picked a great campaign that could really translate to all the different networks and help that and really push that message out there. So these are obviously pretty high-profile examples. And a question I get is, okay, where can I start? I'm not ready to jump into a huge integrated campaign like that. Well, communities are personal, and luckily it's easy to test in a community what works, like that Cricut example. You'll know instantly when you post something whether or not it works for you or works for your community. So with IFTJ, we decided to test out our community. They were getting, the larger we got, the more personal the posts became. They were, you know, sharing prayers with us, sharing why they support us, all these different things that are very personal. So in order to kind of push that community closer together and kind of really bring it, bring the community to a place where you have that individual connection and can start to identify those people that will advocate for you, we decided to kind of introduce ourselves to the community. So we chose the founder and his daughter, who also has a prominent role in our organization, and myself, who runs the day-to-day interaction. Very informal. We just posted this on our Facebook wall and let them know that this is who's behind the page. This is who's behind the logo that you're talking with. So in that way, we were able to, the community just kind of flourished after that. They felt that, you know, they understood what we were doing, and the comments increased, everything increased. We grew by 10,000 supporters or fans, it was at that time, in a week after we decided to make that shift, make that change. So it sometimes does pay to go out on a limb a little bit and test. So once we got to that level, I wanted to see where the community was in terms of engagement. What can I get them to do to let me know where they are in terms of going off of the community and actually doing something to advocate for the organization? So one of the ideas that I had was we basically just printed an Israeli flag and had Team Israel above the flag, and we asked people to download or save the image to their computer and print it out and take a picture of themselves holding it and then upload it back to the wall. So it was like a picture campaign. It was, you know, very simple. There wasn't, it was just to see if people would respond to it, if people would like to do it. So I was surprised when it actually worked fairly well. Within 24 hours, we had received over 70 photos of people that had printed out the photo or added their own picture to the photo and uploaded it back to us. So on the left hand, you'll see the pictures of our Facebook photo album, people holding the sign. And it was, we had people from all over the world commenting on it, asking how they can get their picture up there. And it was a great learning experience, too, because it also gave me an idea of where they are technically, because I had to go in and explain a couple different times how to upload the picture and things like that. But the fact is that there were all these people that were willing to go that extra mile and make that effort to do that. And then they reach out more, and you're able to locate the people that can advocate on behalf of the organization. We even got a whole group from France to send in a picture to us, which was great. That has they do a weekly meeting for Israel in their church, and now their church is a supporter of our organization. So it does have, you can start small and then build up from there. So these are just some credits and some great websites to look at, especially for community building. I just wanted to mention Amy Sample Ward. She's excellent in terms of learning how to grow a community and how to really help it flourish to the point of where you can do something pretty incredible like To Mama With Love and Charity Water. So that's about it.
Okay, I mean, we've covered quite a bit of ground on the webinar topic today. Now seems to be a good time to take some questions from the audience. A lot of people have already chimed in, so we have a lot. I guess we'll jump right in here. Christina, this is regarding your presentation. How did they actually raise money on the From Mama With Love project? There seemed to be a little confusion with that.
Oh, sure. Great question. What they did is when you signed up for the program to create, they called it a heart space. It's basically like you create your own profile, like you would create a Facebook page. You would create a heart space. To do that, you donate money, and you could also donate like $10 because, you know, they kind of phrase it to where you're giving $10 because you have a mother who loves you, and you're going to help with this campaign for another mother who's trying to do something extraordinary for, you know, the children in her community. So they would you know, kind of do it that way. Or when you sign up to have your heart space, you give $10 and that's your kind of donation towards the program.
Okay. And in regards to your organization, how did all this social media growth add to your donations?
That's a great question. Well, as I'm sure everyone on this webinar knows, there's no science in order to, you know, to really kind of track that all the way through. It has definitely had a huge impact on our traffic growth. Facebook wasn't even in our top 100 traffic referral sites, and it's been number one traffic referral for the past 6 months. So it's been a huge generator in new traffic, unique traffic. It's expanded our demographic. So we have all of that on top of we do track gifts that are coming through causes.com, which we use on Facebook, which has been over $10,000. So in terms of gifts, we are I don't want to get too technical into it, but there's also ways that you can track someone coming off of using Google Analytics, people coming off of the websites onto your website and donating. So we're tracking those people as well. So that's kind of like the short answer to that question, I guess.
Okay. And James, more aimed at yours, you were talking about the white label social community. What about how do you determine if that's a good option for your nonprofit instead of, you know, meeting donors where they already are in public social networking?
Sure, great question. So, you know, when it comes to meeting your donors where they already are, that is a great strategy to pull them into your own white label community if you decide to have one. I would never be so presumptuous to say that they're for every single association, but if you have an intrinsic way that you can connect on a more personal level with your donors or with your members, or they would benefit from being able to communicate with each other around the driven purpose of why they associate with your nonprofit or with your association, then that's something that could be an advantage for your membership. I think I could further add to that by saying, you know, look at the trends of how your members or how your donors are interacting with your association. If they are disengaging from in-person meetings or kind of call to actions in the community and maybe focusing more on electronic, you know, interaction, then that could be another catalyst as well. You know, probably the most important part and the real benefit, again, to the organization is taking not only the community as being a benefit for the members to interact with each other or gain information, but again, it's going back to tracking that information, tracking people's activity in that community to better engage with your donors or your members, if that makes sense. And if anybody would like to talk about this more, again, my Twitter hash is on there, as well as the hash FSWebJLW, which will be kind of having a group discussion throughout the remainder of the day, if anybody would like to join that as well.
A lot of the examples given as well were kind of larger scale and bigger organizations. There's a lot of questions here for, you know, smaller nonprofits. They can't really spend a whole lot of time solely to social media. So what are some basic things you would recommend that, you know, would really help them jump in the social media game?
Right. So one of the things that we do with smaller associations, a lot of times they have younger volunteers that would be happy and are very well versed at social media technologies to assist in leading some of these campaigns. One of the things that I've suggested to a few different associations is if you're in a town with a college, I know that the college internship programs through the business school and communication schools and most public universities have internship programs where they're happy to lend you a student, you know, for school credit and use them to assist you with some of those items. I mean, you know, that's kind of a resource discussion in terms of being able to manage it. In terms of size of the association, actual donor size or member size, you know, that's kind of, again, one of those ROI type conversations that each association would have to evaluate for themselves, looking at, you know, what that value proposition that it would bring specifically to their member or donor type.
Can I add something to that real quick, Joe?
Certainly.
I do want to say that when you do interns, you need to be careful in terms of they need to really understand your mission, especially if you have a more complex mission that, you know, if there's a clear opposition to it, you have to, they have to make sure that if they're going to go out and speak for your organization, that they know exactly how to do that. They know exactly the type of message that you want to portray before, you know, you just let them loose.
And some more questions here. What are the average costs in developing a white label space? And then, you know, what's kind of the benefit in going that route as far as going to one of the free ones?
Sure. So in terms of a white label community or a private community, there's a lot of different pay types or kind of models out there and how you can acquire one of these. Some organizations will go the route of trying to hire or you know, take advantage of different volunteer developers to put together a community for them. Our community is a SaaS-based platform, so that means all of the hosting, all of the development, all of the customer service and upgrades across the course of doing business together are included in a monthly licensing fee. Typically for an association, that can range anywhere from $500 on the very, very low end, depending on what company and solution you go with. All the way up to, say, $3,000 to $4,000 a month, depending on what you're looking at. As far as a custom build, we've seen organizations build very rudimentary and basic communities for $20,000, and on the high end, you know, big companies and organizations can spend upwards of millions of dollars on different campaigns and technology.
Okay. And as a more general question, you know, social networks are all about engagement and that nature. So how appropriate is it to make asks on your social network conversations, and how often is it appropriate to do that?
Who's that one to?
To either or.
I can take that. So to clarify, they're asking how appropriate is it to ask someone in your community, like a call to action, to donate or to volunteer time? Is that where they're going with that?
Correct. Yeah.
I think that's something where, you know, one of the really big advantages in a lot of these communities is they have survey capability. You know, I mean, how useful is it to be able to have your members log into a community and have a really quick survey to say, how often would you like to be notified? How often would you be willing to lend a helping hand in a community project on the weekend? Because different individuals are going to be different. To be able to put some carte blanche, you know, kind of blanket statement over your entire constituent donor group or member group would, I think, be the wrong approach. You would want to be able to segment different types of individuals because they're all going to be a little different.
Okay. And do either one of you feel like an organization should have a definitive social media policy and a procedure to follow for posts?
I would say in general for the whole thing, definitely. Before you even start with social media, you're going to want to have a strategy. You're going to want to have goals so that you know going in how you can report on whether or not you were successful in it. In order to grow, you need to figure out, okay, is it traffic, is it donations? Our policy and our strategy that we had for posting was kind of guided off of our strategy, which was, you know, you listen to it and you figure out, okay, well, two posts a week, we get a good amount of feedback. Let's try three posts. Then you figure out with each community how much content's too much and things like that. So it's James could speak to the question as well, but I think that it depends on the community, and each community is different. At least that's what we've found.
James, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that any organization with more than one employee should have a policy because everybody needs to be on the same table as to what the objectives are, and kind of repeating what Christina said, but more importantly, how to triage things that kind of may come out of left field. You know, it's not to say that if you have an online community, a private community, that everybody inside of that community is always going to be happy with what you're doing and how you're doing it. And so everybody needs to be, you know, able to negotiate the way that the association or organization sees that to be, you know, the most appropriate manner.
Okay.
A good example of that, just to kind of tie up on that, is when the flotilla incident happened a couple years ago is when we first realized how important it was to have a policy for comments. We actually had to shut down our page along with the Jewish Agency for Israel because we were filled with comments of all different kinds of, you know, hate comments and things like that. We weren't prepared for that type of huge influx of commenting, and we weren't prepared in terms of, okay, well, how do we delete these? If we do, it kind of is in the face of transparency. So it was during that time that we developed commenter guidelines, both the Jewish Agency for Israel, their sister organizations, and our organization as well, that kind of said, you know, these are, we want you to participate in our community, but here are their guidelines. You can't swear, you can't attack someone else, you can't do any of these things, and if you do, we reserve the right to delete your comment. So that kind of speaks to how important it can be to have some type of outlining goal sets so that you know what to do in a situation like that.
Okay. And how can Fundraisers Link capture data about members and users of social media pages to the constituent database? This example someone threw out here is like, you know, how do we integrate it with something like the Razor's Edge or something like that?
Sure. So most social platforms have what they, and this is a white label community here. I'm not talking about Facebook and these free platforms out there. But if you bring your donors or members into a white label community, that activity, depending on the solution, is going to be tracked in some sort of back end, which then through an API potentially could be passed, certain items could be passed to a database solution like Razor's Edge or something else. Our community, or what we call our social CRM platform, actually tracks all of the activity in the community as well as in the donor database. So you're having, you know, donations that are done, how many messages they send out in the community, how many comments they make, you know, if they start a group, if they add to a discussion topic, add a resource, add a video, view a video. All of these things are adding up points. The point system is completely set by each individual association or nonprofit, and then passing back into the database where it's then aggregated and can be reported on and used. What we've found is that typically a white label community software association doesn't have an API wide enough to pass back all of the data points that are typically required. It's one of the big advantages in NFI Studios being owned by Avectra, who specializes in the database side. So, you know, they've productized this product that is a seamless end-to-end product to allow that kind of capability to happen. And I think it's something that you'll see in the future. Other organizations will have to step up to the bat and provide something similar as well.
And how about with, is there a way to track that sort of stuff through Facebook and Twitter and match it up with your constituent database?
Go ahead. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, I can tell you how we do it. We use Orange Leap, which is a kind of a partner of Empower, but for our donor management system here at IFCJ. But you could use source codes based on when you just like how you're able to tell if someone came to through your organization and you know, through an acquisition mail piece, you're able to, you know, tell if they came in through your e-newsletter. The same thing with Facebook. If you track the what we were able to do is just change the URL so that it redirects back to your website and it tags it. You're able to tag it so that if they give a gift and they you know, become a donor, that you're able to tell that the gift that they gave, yes, they gave it on your website, but they gave it on your website and were, you know, came there from Facebook. So you're able to track the source of the person themselves and the source of the gift. So I know that's that's going to vary depending on what donor management system that you're using at your organization. So it's a hard question to answer specifically, but there are ways that you can do that, especially with Google Analytics if you're fluent in that program.
Okay. And, James, there's a lot of more questions here about white label groups. I'll take one more here. How can a small organization find white label groups to join or create their own?
You can Google community providers and you'll come up with a number of vendors. Our organization, NFI Studios, provides, again, turnkey social communities for associations. But it's, you know, I think Google would probably be one of the quickest, easiest ways. You could also look into if any of you are members of ASAE or different nonprofits for or associations for nonprofits. A lot of times they have vendor partners and people that they work with as well, which you could search out.
And do you have any, could you give provide maybe an example or two of an organization that uses a white label group?
We have quite a few organizations, actually. Professional associations, we have the Virginia Association of Realtors and quite a few associations there. We also work with Metal Treatment Institute, SEMA.org. We have about 100 customers at this point.
Okay. And here's a more broad question for either one of you. Is there ever a time that you should kind of shut it down on social media, like you were saying, Christina, when you know, you had all those that influx of situation going
yeah.
on your social media?
I think it if you have a policy in place, that'll help guide you. We knew that that potential existed. So there comes a moment where you just decide, okay, I can't. Whoever's running your system, like I was the only person that was in charge of monitoring this page, I can't stay up for 48 hours straight. So if I'm not deleting it, and I don't have anyone that's well versed enough to help me, that leaves me no other choice than to shut down the comments until we figure out, you know, what's next. And I think that organizations shouldn't be afraid. Just to be honest, I mean, we were 100% honest with our community. We had, you know, at that point, I think around 25,000 people on the page. And, you know, I sent out a post and I just said, listen, this is what's happening. We're getting all these awful, you know, we're being attacked by all these other organizations or all these other people that are saying these things about what's happening. We can't keep up with it. We have to disable comments. We'll let you know as soon as, you know, we're ready to put it back up. And they were very understanding about the whole thing. Again, I think it's just being honest and letting them know where you stand. I think that's the time to do it when there is really no other option that you have.
Okay. And there's a question here about do you know any examples of organizations using location-based social media networks, you know, Facebook Places, Foursquare, Yelp, to support their mission? Kind of seems like it would be something good for a local organization with one location that they hone in on to use.
Well, we are just starting to use location-based API use for we have a tour that we take to Israel every year. So we're looking at using Foursquare to kind of do a check-in at each stop that our tour makes, you know, when they go to Israel, so that it could be populated on our website and people that couldn't necessarily make the tour for one reason or another but are very interested in going to Israel can experience it in a more real way. They can upload photos each time they check in, upload videos of what they're seeing, and it happens as they go. So that's a brand new piece to how we're using social media software, social media technology, and location-based software.
And when it comes to Facebook, is there such a thing as posting too much about what's going on that it becomes kind of ineffective?
Yes, I mean, and you'll find that if you're watching your insights, like Facebook provides so much data for you as a community manager to monitor what's happening on your page. You'll notice when we moved from 3 posts a day to 4 posts a day, I started watching my unsubscribe rate go up, and I knew at that point that was too much. So you readjust and you go back to 3. So that's how you can tell. But there's the Jewish Agency for Israel, which is another organization that we work with, is very different. They can only post once a day. So it's very different. It depends on your community and who's involved and how active they are.
James, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, again, you know, I think everybody's a little bit different. I've seen some associations on Facebook get away with posting 6 times a day, and that worked for their model. You know, I think that, you know, saying that 2 associations, again, are exactly the same is difficult. And what Christina's talking about, you know, looking at the metrics, listening to your constituents is probably the most key critical element there.
Okay. All right. Well, it looks like we're just about out of time for today. On behalf of Fundraising Success and Avectra, I want to thank you for attending today's webinar. Be sure to check out our webinar page to get information on all of our archived and upcoming webinars. And we will try to get as many of these questions answered. You know, I'll send the emails to our presenters, try to get these answered for you, and put them in an issue of our online newsletter, Today in Fundraising. If you just take a minute to fill out the brief feedback survey that will appear on your screen next, we would be very grateful. Your feedback will influence the webinars we bring to you in the future. Thanks for joining us. I'd like to thank our presenters again. I thought they did a fabulous job. And I hope to see you at the next Fundraising Success webinar.